Giribanadari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Balava Giri Banadari Yasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Banachari Jamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balabha Giri Banadari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balava Giri Banadari Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan. Jaya Nitya Lila Pravista Astatara Satasi Simanas Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Premsakohu Sri Krishna Taitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadha Srivasati Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Sham Sunda Gopa Gopina Sham Kunda Radha Kundi Gita Govardhan Ki Jai Shiva Kreshwa Pandit Ki Jai Gaura Bhimanande All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the lotus feet of Sisi Guru and Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So we're reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 16th chapter, verse number 1. A new chapter on our progression through the Srimad Bhagavatam. Text number 1 and 2, I'll chant and recite translation on text 1 and then responsively we'll do text number 2. Brahmavacha iti tad grinatam tesham muninam yoga dharminam patinandya jagadedam vaikuntam nilaya vibhu. Translation. Lord Brahma said, after thus congratulating the sages for their nice words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose abode is in the kingdom of God, spoke as follows. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Etato Prasado Mayam Jaya Vijaya Hevacha Kadarti Krityamam Yadvo bhava kratam atikramam. Sri Bhagavan uvacha. Etoto prasado mayam. Jayo vijaya hevacha. Kadarti krityamam yodva. Bhava kritam matikramam. Tato dasadau mayam. Sri Bhagavan uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Eto, these two, Tao, they, Prasado, attendants, Mayam, of mine, Jaya, named Jaya, Vijaya, named Vijaya, Eva, certainly, Cha and Kadarti Kritya by ignoring Mum me yet which va against you Bahu great Akritam have committed Atikramam offense. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, these attendants of mine, Jai and Vijay by name, have committed a great offense against you because of ignoring me. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. To commit an offense at the feet of a devotee of the Lord is a great wrong. Even when a living entity is promoted to Vaikuntha, there is still the chance that he may commit offenses. But the difference is that when one is in the Vaikuntha planet, even if by chance one commits an offense, he is protected by the Lord. This is the remarkable fact in the dealings of the Lord and the servitor, as seen in the present incident concerning Jai and Vijay. The word atikramam herein used indicates that in offending a devotee, one neglects the Supreme Lord himself. In offending a devotee, one neglects the Supreme Lord himself. By mistake, the doorman held the sages from entering Vaikuntha Loka. But because they were engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord, their annihilation was not expected by advanced devotees. The Lord's presence on the spot was very pleasing to the heart of the devotees. The Lord understood that the trouble was due to his lotus feet not being seen by the sages. And therefore, he wanted to please them by personally going there. The Lord is so merciful that even if there is some impediment for his devotee, he himself manages matters in such a way that the devotee is not bereft of having audience at his lotus feet. There is a very good example in the life of Haridas Thakur. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was residing in Jagannath Puri, Haridas Thakur, who happened to be Mohammedan by birth, was with him. In Hindu temples, especially in those days, no one but a Hindu was allowed to enter. Although Haridas Thakur was the greatest of all Hindus in this behavior, he considered himself a Mohammedan and did not enter the temple. Lord Chaitanya could understand his humility, and since he did not go to the temple, Lord Chaitanya himself, who was none different from Jagannath, used to come and sit with Haridas Thakur daily. Here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we also find that same behavior of the Lord. His devotees were prevented from seeing his lotus feet, but the Lord himself came to see them on the same lotus feet which they aspired. It is also significant that he is accompanied by the goddess of fortune. The goddess of fortune is not seen by ordinary persons, but the Lord was so kind that although the devotees did not aspire for such an honor, he appeared before them with the goddess of fortune. Om Ajnana Timadandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksuhun Militam Minatasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayate Grim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinitarino Vanchakopatribhischa Kripa Sindhu Bahebacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavebyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhar Shivasidi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. I offer my obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the invincible Lord Sri Krishna. Simply by meditating upon his lotus feet, I have been able to study and appreciate this great literature, Srimad Bhagavatam. This purport in the second verse today, in this opening verses of the chapter 16, really just have so much packed into it. The two prominent and important points here are, one, warnings against offending devotees, and two, the necessity for taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. In both of these cases, there are numerous examples by which one could go for quite some period of time past the length of our regular classes on these subjects, because they are so essential and so important in our devotional development. Many times I've mentioned this myself, and others have also spoken on this, how in our modern age of electronic communities and forums and online life, we can easily say anything at all, whether it's the truth or not, whether it has supporting evidence or not, whether it's respectful or not, and think that we're getting away with it. Yet, we see from this situation being described in these handful of chapters here, that's not the case. If one offends a devotee, then they become atikramam, separated from the lotus feet of the Lord due to those offenses. The length and the variety of places where we can find warnings about this in our literatures and the pastimes with the Lord and his devotees, it's as vast as the oceans of this world. Yet, we commonly disregard such instructions, and as the saying goes, we go about all willy-nilly. My grandmother used to say that, just stop acting so willy-nilly, speaking all these ill words against devotees. These words have been described in the last chapter of this third canto, chapter 15, verse 23, as kukata, bad words, that matigni, kill the intelligence. So these bad words that kill the intelligence then impact even further our rampant continuation of these offenses against Vaishnavas. And it's very popular in this age to do this. Equally popular, we're beginning to see Even amongst some of our initiating gurus, when their disciples take initiation, they include and don't criticize Vaishnavas. This is how important it is. So I tried to collect from a variety of sources, like, I don't know, 33 pages worth, of instructions on this subject matter. First of all, we look to Narottam Das Thakur in his Pratana. It's a book that's filled with such amazing nectar. Matter of fact, it's one of the two books that Gokushor Das Babaji carried with him and recommended that one should read. And there's a very important lesson that we can find in the songs in Pratana, particularly 43, 44, 45, and 46. They deal with how valuable and necessary the mercy of Vaishnavas is. None of us would be here without the mercy of Vaishnavas. Be it in the form of their shelter, be it in the form of water from their feet, dust from their feet, their grace in saving us from material life, relieving of us of our karma and freeing us from bad association, all these things. But, and this is a very important but, he warns that the holy name can deliver one from an offense to Lord Hari. However, Narottam Das Thakur instructs that if one offends a Vaishnava, there is no means of deliverance. If one offends a Vaishnava, Narottam Das Thakur says, there's no means of deliverance. So we should be very, very fearful when we read a statement like this from our acharyas. However, sadly, covered by our past sins, our pride, our illusion, and blinded by a lack of discrimination, we're not afraid and we run forward into the perils of our own ruination by this. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has given two verses here on this subject. Due to the blockage of offenses, aparad, one can never attain the flow of pure transcendental mellows. Due to the blockage of offenses, one can never experience the pure holy name of the Lord. One who is covered by offenses may sing the pastimes of the Lord, but this will never do away with the lust burning in the heart. By the blockage of offenses to the Vaishnavas, one's eternal spiritual body will never be obtained. This is our goal, to attain our spiritual body, to be engaged eternally in the loving service of the Lord in that Siddha Deha, which we're not aware of. It's a whole other level, but that is the goal. And that'll never be attained if we offend Vaishnavas. This is the instruction from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Now, in the Sri Bhakti Mala, we have two very important verses on this subject. After hearing about the glories of the devotees of Lord Hari, if one finds fault with such devotees, they will suffer in this life, and in the next life will be in vain. If you wish to attain the shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, simply glorify his devotees. If you do this without offense, you will receive his shelter. Otherwise, if you avoid doing so and instead offend devotees, all your pious deeds will be as useless as dried up seeds. And those of us that are prone towards gardening, have an inclination in that matter, know that if you have dried up seeds, they give you no result. You can plant them, you can water them, but because they've already finished, they've got no potency. Now, there's a story that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur tells, a very, very interesting story. There was once a king who was very famous for distributing food to the Brahmins. And one time, he would personally, with his own hand, distribute. So one time during the distribution of this food, an eagle happened to fly overhead from where this banquet was taking place, that the Vaishnavas and Brahmins were there. And in its claws was a dead poisonous snake that it had captured. So by chance, a drop of venom from that snake's mouth accidentally fell onto the plates, onto one of the plates that the king was passing out to the Brahmins. So no one saw this happen. No one understood what had happened. So the king just kept passing out the plates of food to the Brahmins. The Brahmin that happened to receive this particular plate of poisoned food ate it and died. And, of course, this greatly saddened the king. Now, one of the servants of Yamaraj, whose service it was to return karma to the living entities for their activities, was confused about who's going to receive the karma for this sin of poisoning a Brahmin. It wasn't the fault of the eagle. He was simply carrying a dead snake in his claws. It wasn't the blame of the dead snake. It wasn't the king's fault. He had no knowledge of it. So there was some confusion about where this karma for the untimely death of this Brahmin should go. Meanwhile, as this contemplation is going on by Yamaraj's servants, some other Brahmins were on their way to the king's kingdom for this distribution of food that he would arrange. And they saw a lady sitting by the side of the road, some kind of merchant, and they said, do you know where the king's palace is and how we can get there? And the woman said, yes, I know. And she pointed out this direction. She said, but be very careful. This king is known as a murderer of Brahmins, because under his arrangement, this food. So at that moment, the servant of Yamaraj knew who should receive the karma for the Brahmin's death. And it was that woman on the side of the road. So the moral of this story, Bhaktisiddhanta says, is that if you criticize someone and you are correct in your accusations, you receive half the karma. And if you criticize someone and blame them undeservedly, you receive 100% of the karma. So this story should inspire us to be very, very cautious what we think and what we say about others as we're engaged in our devotional path. Now, in the Bhakti Ratnakara of Narahari Chakravarti Thakur, there's a discussion with Raghava Pandit. Now, Raghava Pandit tells a very interesting story. He speaks of how Advaita Acharya was once on pilgrimage and stayed in Mathura. And he stopped there because at that time, of course, Mathura was extremely beautiful. Mathura is very nice now, but not quite like it was then. And at that time, there was, as the Bhakti Ratnakara describes, a worthless Brahmin that lived there. And why was he worthless? Because he invariably spoke ill of Vaishnavas as a regular habit. So all the inhabitants of Mathura, they feared him and avoided his association. Now, once in the presence of Advaita Acharya, this Brahmin began to speak ill of Vaishnavas. This is how foolish he was in front of Advaita Acharya does this. So Advaita Acharya describes, became so furious that his lips began to tremble and his eyes grew red. And he shouted in a voice like Nrisingadev, oh, you wicked man, today you will not escape from me. I shall sever your head from your body with my chakra for your offenses. And with that, Advaita Acharya assumed the four-armed form of Vishnu. And in each of the arms, instead of the club, lotus, that was a chakra. The Brahmin, he immediately was brought to his senses by this proclamation against him by Advaita Acharya and this form that Advaita Acharya manifested and could understand his mistake. And he prayed to Advaita Acharya, oh, my dear Lord, punish me as you like. Unfortunately, I have lost my good intelligence. And not understanding Vaishnava Tattva, we have Vishnu Tattva, but there's also Vaishnava Tattva, the truth and the understanding of Vaishnavas. Not understanding Vaishnava Tattva, I have committed unlimited sins. Please be kind to me and save me from the reaction of these sins. So just by this appearance and soon to manifest curse of Advaitacharya, the Brahmin's intelligence was returned. And he could understand, I have committed offenses against so many Vaishnavas. So he began to cry very helplessly and pleading and threw himself at the lotus feet of Advaitacharya. Advaitacharya then concealed this angry four-armed form. And seeing the wretched condition of this brahmana, Advaitacharya felt pity for him and decided to bless him. And Advaitacharya then spoke some very sweet words to him. He said, the sins that you have committed would send you to hell, but I will tell you what to do to become free from that reaction. Admit your guilty mentality of faulting the Vaishnavas, give up all sense enjoyment, and engage yourself in Nam Sankirtan. Serve the Vaishnavas with your heart and your soul, and be very cautious in your dealings with them. A very important word, very cautious in your dealings with them. Engage yourself in worship according to the standards of pure devotion, and do not tell anyone what you have seen here today. After advising the Brahmin in this way, Advaitacharya continued on with his pilgrimage. The Brahmin, after that, became completely absorbed in Nam Sankirtan and proved himself very humble by visiting the house of every Vaishnava in Mathura with tears in his eyes, throwing himself at their lotus feet and begging to be forgiven for his offenses. Seeing his sincere efforts, the Vaishnavas became very satisfied with him and wished him well. Some Vaishnavas wondered in conversation amongst themselves what had caused the change of behavior in this very ill-speaking, wicked person. One individual person said, oh, I know. There was a Brahmin that came to Mathura whose effulgence was as bright as the sun. Most likely, he was the Lord appearing in human form, and he has changed the heart and words of that Brahmana. So some people could detect Advaitacharya's divinity. So here we see, sometimes even a devotee is foolish to say contradictory things in front of those that they shouldn't say these things in front of. The Lord can interject in this and change one's heart if they sincerely surrender and understand their mistakes. Now, from the Chaitanya Bhagavat, we all know very well the pastime of Jagai and Madhai. Nityananda would go out preaching with Haridas Thakur. Actually, it's a funny story. When Haridas Thakur returned after one of these adventures with Nityananda, he particularly the first time they met Jagai and Madhai, he said to Mahaprabhu, he said, Jagai and Madhai are drunk on liquor, and Nityananda is drunk on love of God. I'm the only sober man in the crowd. So anyway, we know the story, how they attacked, and then Mahaprabhu appeared, and then they ultimately surrendered. Now, it mentions in the Chaitanya Bhagavat that all the sins of Jagai and Madhai upon their surrender entered into the body of Lord Gauranga. And the beautiful golden form of Lord Gauranga, right before the eyes of all the devotees, transformed into a pitch black complexion. The blackness of their sins covered the golden body of Lord Gauranga. At that time, all the devotees became very fearful, and they were also very shocked to see the Lord with a black body once it had absorbed the sins of Jagai and Madhai. Advaitacharya looked at this and laughed. He knew exactly what the Lord was doing. So in a joking voice, he said, aha, now you look just like Lord Krishna. You have turned blackish. And everyone laughed at this. But then Lord Gauranga, in a very serious voice, said, now you see my body is black and burning with the sins of Jagai and Madhai. Now chant and perform the congregational holy names, because this congregational chanting is so powerful that it will liberate me from all of their sins. Not that the Lord needs to be liberated from something like this, but this is the point he's making. And then Mahaprabhu gives a very instructive statement on this subject. Where will all these sins go, he questions. Anyone who offends my devotees, these sins from Jagai and Madhai will enter into their heart. Now, Chitragupta, the head scribe of Yamaraj, once spoke with Yamaraj and inquired from him about the vastness of the sins of Jagai and Madhai. Yamaraj said to him, he said, you write them all down. Chitragupta said, my dear Lord Yamaraj, said, if myself and 1,000 of my assistants sat down and wrote, from now till the end of time, we could not write all these sinful activities of Jagai and Madhai. So all of those sinful activities will at once enter into the heart of a devotee who speaks ill of the associates and devotees and followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, today we're honoring the memory of Vakreshwar Pandit, whose pastime happens to fit very accurately with this verse. Of course, we know the most well-known pastime of Vakreshwar Pandit is his ability to dance for 72 hours. 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 72 hours nonstop dancing. Amazing. But there's an interesting story about Vakreshwar Pandit involving Devananda Pandit. And this story, the beginning of the story, takes place before the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Devananda Pandit was a very well-known speaker of the Bhagavatam. And one day, Srivas Pandit went to hear from him. And at that time, Devananda Pandit was surrounded on all sides by his students. And they were all very carefully listening to his reading of the Bhagavatam and speaking. Now, Srivas Pandit, of course, is a very highly exalted Rasika Bhakta and very, very experienced in tasting the mellows of devotional service. And hearing the sweetness of the particular verses that Devananda Pandit was speaking on from the Bhagavatam, Srivas Thakur fell to the ground in tears of ecstasy and began weeping and wailing and just uncontrollable ecstasy, rolling on the ground like this. Seeing this, the immature students of Devananda Pandit said, oh, this man is mad. He's not properly giving attention to the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he's offending Devananda Pandit. Throw him out of here. Physically remove him. And so that's what they did. You can imagine these young, immature, maybe old, immature students physically removing Srivas Pandit from the assembly. Now, Devananda Pandit saw all of this, and he did nothing to prevent his disciples in this behavior towards Srivas Pandit. And it's stated that if a disciple commits a sin as a result of the guru's ignorance, the guru also partakes in part of that reaction of those disciples. Therefore, it was mentioned that Devananda Pandit had to suffer part of the reaction for the offenses committed against Srivas Pandit. Without saying a word about any of this to anyone, Srivas Pandit very humbly, once he regained external consciousness being thrown out of the assembly, he returned to his home. And as I mentioned, this all took place before the appearance of Mahaprabhu. Now, after Mahaprabhu's appearance, we know that there was the Mahaprakash Lila, and Mahaprabhu revealed many things to many different devotees. During that time, he revealed something to Srivas. He called to him, Srivas, Srivas, do you remember that time when you went to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam in the house of Devananda Pandit? When you fell to the ground in ecstasy upon hearing the nectarian verses of the Bhagavatam? And when the disciples of Devananda Pandit, as a result of his ignorance of your exalted devotion, threw you out of that assembly? At that time, you went home feeling very distressed, but you told no one. Do you remember this? Hearing these words of the Lord, Srivas Pandit was very, very astonished. And he fell at the Lord's lotus feet, grabbing hold of them, realizing the supreme position of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One day, as Mahaprabhu was wandering through the town of Navadvip with some of his disciples, this is during his earlier years before sannyas, he came upon the road where Devananda Pandit had his house. Oh, it's over here, sorry. He came upon the road where Devananda Pandit had his house. And he could hear in the distance Devananda Pandit was speaking on the Bhagavatam. And when he heard this, Mahaprabhu became very, very much enraged. Chaitanya Bhagavat records that with sharp words, the Lord said, "What does this fellow know of the meaning of the Srimad Bhagavatam? He will never know the meaning of the Bhagavatam in many lifetimes." Now, even though some distance away, Devananda Pandit could hear these statements that Mahaprabhu was making. Of course, Mahaprabhu was speaking in a very loud, thunderous voice, as only Mahaprabhu could do. But again, in his foolishness, he paid no mind to it. It's just that Nimai Pandit, what does he know? Now, during that same period, not exactly the same time, but during that same period, Vakreshwar Pandit was in this area doing kirtan. Now, he had gone to the house of one devotee where there was going to be a program that evening. And Vakreshwar Pandit was completely absorbed in the kirtan and in the dancing. And hearing the news of Vakreshwar Pandit being there and all of this dancing being there, so many people came to take part in the kirtan. And as the night continued on, the kirtan continued on, and more people continued to arrive. And hearing this, Devananda Pandit also thought, "I should go and see what's going on here." So he went to this assembly and saw that there was this empowered figure, Vakreshwar Pandit. And hearing the sweet kirtan and seeing the incredible dancing of Vakreshwar Pandit, Devananda was completely astonished. He actually stood transfixed upon the sight of Vakreshwar Pandit's dancing for what seemed to him to be hours. As the night continued on, the crowd grew more and more, and more attempts were people to push forward and see the dancing of Vakreshwar Pandit. I mean, you know, sometimes we get a very prominent kirtanier come to visit Alachua, and the temple room is just packed to the max. You know, this recent Sadhu Sangha that was held in Orlando, afterwards so many senior Vaishnavas came here and did kirtan, and in the evenings the temple room was just packed. So imagine that multiplied by, I don't know, 100, 1,000, 10,000, and this was the crowd. And as they were watching Vakreshwar Pandit and pushing forward to be able to see, they became quite a boisterous and rowdy crowd as well. Now, at that time, not wanting for Vakreshwar Pandit's dancing to be interfered with, Devananda, who had a cane, you know, it's quite common, we might say, well, why did he have a stick in his hand? But if you go to India, it's quite common that everybody walks around with a stick of some sort, keep monkeys and hogs and dogs and whatever away, you know. And so he had this cane, and he held the crowd back. He literally would push them back and give room for Vakreshwar Pandit to dance. You know, sometimes you see that in our own temple room, the kirtan will get really, you know, wild and woolly, as they might say, and somebody will start dancing and you push the devotees back, okay, give them room to dance. So this is what was going on. This is the origins of doing that type of thing. So Vakreshwar was dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing and, you know, on and on and on, just completely overwhelmed in ecstasy. And he fell to the ground in a faint. Devananda immediately stepped forward and picked up Vakreshwar off the ground, put him on his own lap, and with his own scarf, his own chadar, he took and he wiped the dust off that holy body of Vakreshwar Pandit. And in this way, on that day, Devananda Pandit began his bhakti seva, his service to devotees. So 5 years after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas and is residing in Jagannath Puri, he returned to Navadvip Dham. We know that he would travel quite extensively, and he returned to Navadvip to, you know, see the devotees and, you know, like this, give his association and so on. Upon his return, it mentions that the devotees of Navadvip felt as if their life had been returned to them, and their joy knew absolutely no bounds of ecstasy. And in order to see the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu, thousands of people gathered there. Whoever had previously committed offenses to Mahaprabhu during his earlier Navadvip Lila as a mere student or teacher, when he manifested his full personality in Lila and came back to Navadvip, they all came forward and they were all forgiven. They all came to beseech the Lord's forgiveness for whatever offense, large or small, they may have committed. And as we know from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavata, Chaitanya Mangala, many offenses were committed against the Lord during this time. So at that time, in a place known as Aparad Bhajanam, or the Temple of Amnesty, sometimes called, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu granted this forgiveness to all who gathered there and gave them instructions on executing their life in the process of devotional service. Now, at that time, Devananda Pandit came, and he went before the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He offered his obeisances first from a distance, and he was feeling a bit, you know, a little bit embarrassed, you know. He was standing off to one side after offering obeisances, and the Lord saw him and said, "Oh, you." We remember this pastime from Nityananda and Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunathi is hiding there. So at any rate, Mahaprabhu pointed him out. You are the servant of Vakreshwar Pandit. By your service to my dear devotee Vakreshwar Pandit, you have pleased me very much. As a result of your service to him, you are automatically very close to me. Vakreshwar Pandit is empowered with Krishna Shakti. By serving my devotee Vakreshwar Pandit, you have attained the mercy of Krishna. Now, hearing these words from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Devananda Pandit was overwhelmed, and deep feelings of devotion arose within his heart. And his voice was choked up, and he offered this following statement or prayer to Mahaprabhu. He said, "Oh, my dear Lord, O Supreme Master, you have appeared in Navadvip just to deliver all the fallen souls. I am a great sinner. I have committed sins against you and your devotees. I have failed to worship your lotus feet. And as a result of this, I have cheated myself out of your causeless mercy. O Lord of all creation, Supersoul of all that lives, you are supremely merciful. By your causeless mercy, I have been able to take darshan of your holy feet on this day. O supremely merciful one, please be kind upon me and instruct me in the goal of life. Please explain to me the real meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam as well." Now, this is a significant point that he makes in this paragraph of praise, that he finishes with this statement. He is known as a Bhagavat speaker. He is known as one that understands the Bhagavat. Yet Mahaprabhu has earlier said, no, he'll never understand the Bhagavat. He's offended devotees. And in his explanation of the Bhagavat, he has let offenses to devotees go on within his vision and not stopped it. And by getting this mercy of Mahaprabhu, he has understood, yes, I have committed offenses. I don't understand the Bhagavat. My dear Lord, you please explain the Bhagavat to me. So then Mahaprabhu gives him an answer. Very, very wonderful. Oh, my Brahmana, previously you committed an offense at the lotus feet of Srivas Pandit. If you want forgiveness, you must go to him and beg that forgiveness at his lotus feet. There is no difference between the book Bhagavat and the Bhakta Bhagavat. If you get the mercy of the Bhakta Bhagavat, then you can easily attain the mercy of the book Bhagavat. This is also a very significant statement by the Lord, that we cannot understand the Bhagavatam simply on our own ability. Many of us have had this experience in our path towards the shelter of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet of reading Bhagavad Gita, for instance. In my time, Bhagavad Gita was quite, before coming to Krishna consciousness, Bhagavad Gita was quite out there. And variations and extrapolations and all kinds of things. Who could understand the Bhagavad Gita? What to speak of the Bhagavatam? But by the mercy of the pure devotee, the book Bhagavat, and by the mercy of the Bhakta Bhagavat, we were able to understand these things. We were given that insight that would not have been available to us before. So this is the point Mahaprabhu is making. You've offended a devotee, you have to get the mercy of that devotee, ask for their forgiveness. But in addition, by doing that, then your service, namely in this case, speaking on the Bhagavat, will be fulfilled. So if we have any desire to be successful in our particular service, whatever our service is, if we have any desire to be successful in that way, we must get the blessings of the Bhakta Bhagavat. Because the whole purport of the Bhagavat is service to Krishna. And service to Krishna means service to his devotees. If we don't do both of those things, we have no success in devotional Lord. So hearing these words from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Devananda Pandit embraced that instruction and immediately went to the home of Srivas Thakur. And throwing himself at Srivas Thakur's feet, he begged over and over and over for forgiveness. And at that time, Srivas Thakur embraced Devananda and certainly forgave any offenses he had committed. Not that Srivas was carrying around, oh, you know, I remember that time Devananda offended me. That nonsense. What's he ever going to do? No, he wasn't thinking like that. But because Devananda had been sent by the Lord, and because in reality an offense had been committed, therefore, this forgiveness was given. So these are the precautions that are given to us in avoiding offending a devotee. Now, we've taken the entire time of the class just speaking about what not to do. The importance of taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord is given in the purport of the second verse, how Prabhupada mentions that the Lord understood that his devotees wanted to see his lotus feet, but they were prohibited by the gatekeepers, who in reality were only doing their service, but were doing it without full knowledge of the position of these four little boys, these Kumaras. As a result, they were very anxious, the Kumaras, to see the lotus feet of the Lord and were not able, so the Lord came to them. This helps us become encouraged that even if we have some lack of qualification, if we have some sincere desire, then the Lord will facilitate that desire, even if it means he has to come personally to us. So this placing of the importance of remembering the Lord's lotus feet is instructed all through the Srimad Bhagavatam, most famously in the pastimes of Ambarish Maharaj. It's described when the description is given of Ambarish Maharaj, Savaimana Krishna Padaravindayo, that first Ambarish Maharaj fixed his mind on the lotus feet of the Lord. And then one after the other, he engaged all of his senses. Bhagavatam describes that he engaged his arms in serving the devotees, his legs in walking to the temple, his nose in smelling the incense offered to the Lord, and so on and so on and so on like this, his tongue in tasting the glubjimins offered to the Lord, whatever like that. So in this way, though, he first meditated upon the lotus feet of the Lord. Interesting, in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the one of the purports, Prabhupada mentions this, but in the index at the back of the book, if you look under, there's the listing for Nityananda on commonly so in the Bhagavatam, but it says Nityananda. And then listing the subjects underneath that name, it says, forgetting the lotus feet of puts one in Maya. So there's a verse where in the purport Prabhupada speaks about if one forgets the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, he becomes covered in illusion. So this prayer for remembering the lotus feet of the Lord is very, very essential. It is the foundation upon which the rest of our devotional practices come from, as exemplified by Ambarish Maharaj, Savai Mana Krishna Padarda Mandayo. So the necessity of avoiding offenses is there, but the necessity of taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord is also there. There are many, many verses I could quote from on this subject of taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. I happen to have a good association in my youth as a devotee, and there was a particular compilation put together of many, 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 many pages of quotes about the importance of taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. But we'll leave that for another time and places. We've kind of reached our conclusion here. But this is the necessity of these handful of chapters, particularly 14, 15, and 16, of understanding this pastime of Jai and Vijay. Although ultimately the Lord just wanted some sport, so I need a couple of volunteers, please, to go to the material world and fight with me. You know, like that. That was his mood. And to get that, this whole pastime with Jai and Vijay had to take place. And the Lord personally came because this was his personal desire to see that this whole pastime would be enacted. So we'll finish there and pray that I have not offended any Vaishnavas in this presentation, and that if I have offended any Vaishnavas throughout my activities, you please forgive such offenses and bless me that I won't have to incur the wrath of all of these reactions that are described in these handful of examples. So thank you very much. If we have any comments, questions, corrections, chastisements, oh boy, oh boy. You pick Karnapur, there's like 20 hands up.
Thank you for beautiful explanation how we can prevent ourselves from falling into ignorance and struggling. I'm just reflection on the classes, like all struggles, all difficulties in life are due to making offenses. And I actually can see in my spiritual life, I've struggled a lot. And I think I've made a lot of offenses. So I want to beg everyone here, please forgive me for my offenses that I've made.
That is the plight of all of us, endless offenses. That's why we're here in the material world in the first place. Let's switch. Let's do a little back and forth, man, woman, you know, we'll play, yeah, well, however, you know, whatever. Madhavati. Oh, regatma guy, you know.
When you were narrating that story where the lady was the one who
pointed out the
criticized
fault, yeah.
The king, or identified the king as fault, his fault. It reminded me of in the first canto of the bull, Dharma, right? Parikshit was asking who. Who cut off your legs? And his narration, he was saying, the one who identifies the perpetrator is equally as at fault as the perpetrator himself.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So this instruction is not something. Oh, that's just one place you found that. No, it's there in the Bhagavatam, it's our general direction. Yeah.
with that same example in mind about the lady, my question comes is, what is the difference between offense, committing offense, and criticizing? Because here, in this particular story, certainly she didn't go and express something to the king and hurt his feelings. And for some reason I thought maybe that's an offense, but it seems like offense and criticism is the same. Do you understand my question?
I think I do. Criticizing and offending, they fall into the same category. One may be done in front of another person and one may be done behind their back, but it's the same activity, you know, speaking ill of Vaishnavas, speaking ill of devotees, whether I do it directly to your face or whether I do it to him about you when you're not there. You know, it's the same business. So that type of reaction is going to be carried throughout that activity, whether one does it directly or indirectly. The subtleties of actions in devotional service are also accounted for. Fortunately, in this age, our thoughts in the mind are not held against us, as in other ages, but words are held against us, actions are held against us. So in this particular story, to accuse the king as a murderer of brahmanas, that's a very serious thing to say. And it wasn't true. Even Yamaraj's servants, like, well, it wasn't the king's fault. It wasn't this one's fault. It wasn't, but this person by the side of the road, you know, oh, no, that's that king. He's a nonsense, you know. So, yeah, all right, there's where the offense goes.
So it is Krishna who is offended and awards the punishment. Is that what it is, that when we criticize behind in our mind, even in our mind, maybe we don't have a reaction to it, but
shapes our mentality of how we deal with others. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the offense is Krishna is offended and therefore he awards, not necessarily if the devotee hasn't heard that the person has criticized, or, you know, he's not affected by it. You know, the king wasn't affected by it because he didn't know that the lady was criticizing. Then is it the Lord that he is affected and therefore he awards the punishment?
Lord is very, very particular about his devotees. And when one speaks ill of the devotees, the Lord hears that. He's situated in our heart after all. And so he does not become pleased by that. And the goal of devotional service is to constantly please the Lord. So if our words, if our actions, either directly or indirectly, do not please the Lord, what's the difference?
I recall in a purport, Srila Prabhupada, in describing the 10 offenses, he said in this regard, to offend the Vaishnavas is to belittle, just to belittle. It's like that really caught my attention, because, you know, you just need to say one or agree with someone who's criticizing a little bit, because you're trying to belittle. It's a belittling of that individual, whether
to minimize the devotee's activities. Yeah, to minimize the activities of devotees, to criticize the activities of devotees, to find fault in the activities, or so on and so on, like that. It all falls into the same category. Yeah.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. What's the difference between, like, criticizing and make a critique, like you give a nice class, I would say fantastic, but certain points, something, you know, for example, but I don't do maliciously.
The fact of the matter is that this is our excuse. Oh, I'm not being mean about it, I'm just stating the fact. Well, somebody has to say something. Well, I'm a manager, therefore I have to. Okay, all these things may be true, but better to err on the side of caution than to, as my grandmother would say, go willy-nilly down the path of, you know, that's not beneficial for us. And, you know, we all, from time to time, I'm as guilty as anyone else, have said things about devotees. But we should understand there's a reaction for that. There's a price to pay for that type of talk. Just as the more we glorify Prabhupada, the more we glorify Krishna, the more we glorify the community of Vaishnavas, the more we advance in devotional service, similarly, the opposite is true. The more we find a justification for criticizing devotees, the reaction will come. We have to understand that, you know, that's what happens. One more on this side, and then we'll come over here to Prangovinda.
I just, it's a curiosity. Do you think that offenses that have been made, so you have ISKCON, the institution, and, you know, so there have been personalities that have served Prabhupada in a very, you know, magnanimous way, but has had fall downs. And instead of that protection, it was like, you know, more like ostracized or excommunicated or whatever word you want to put to it. So, do you feel that maybe some of the, let's see, how do I want to word this? In order to protect the institution, sometimes ISKCON, you know, those in those positions had to not necessarily protect a Vaishnav, or but had to do some drastic measures. So how does that coincide with, you know?
Well, that's not something those of us in the day-to-day Vaishnava activities have to deal with.
But it affects us.
It can affect us. We don't have to let it affect us. We see that in the examples of Mahaprabhu's associates, particularly in this example of Srivas, Srivas certainly had reason to find fault with Devananda Pandit. But instead, he said nothing to anyone. He kept it to himself. That's why he was doubly surprised when Mahaprabhu pointed this out. Oh, you know this. I didn't tell anybody, you know. Secondly, Srila Prabhupada was, from time to time, critical of his godbrothers for different things that they did or didn't do. And he would say to us, I'm an old man, I can say these things, you cannot. Similarly, as he was departing from this world, he asked his godbrothers to please forgive him for any offenses he had committed in his preaching. And they acknowledged, no, you've not made any offense. You've simply boldly spoken, you know, like that. So, you know, we have to be cautious. Is it my responsibility to hold a grudge? Is it my responsibility to give some correction? And if in giving that correction, will it be heard? Am I the proper person to give it? All these things have to be weighed very carefully before we speak. Prandrabo? Oh. Yeah, a little bit, but well, we a couple more minutes.
Okay. Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for such a wonderful and nectaring class, full of learning. So just a thought came into my mind that into that exact story of that king and lady, for a moment, if we think that hypothetically, the king would have purposely killed those Brahmins, and then lady was warning to other Brahmanas that, okay, if you go there, you may get killed. Then also, it would have been the same offense?
It wasn't a warning. It was an accusation against the king. He's a murderer of Brahmanas. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a warning. Oh, be careful when you go there. Don't eat anything he gives you. That's a warning. No, he murdered Brahmins. That's an accusation that's unfounded. That's mm-hmm. the principle of this story. Okay. There's a difference. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Baba. Thank you.
Pran, last one. Oh, another one over here. Okay. We'll see how long Pran goes.
Just technical question. Devananda Pandit and Srivas Thakur, this is before Mahaprabhu appeared. After Mahaprabhu took sannyas, 5 years later he visits and he delivered Devananda Pandit or guided him. But 5 years before, he kind of felt ecstasy by serving Bakreshwar Pandit.
Mm.
So my question is, there is a verse about the offense. It says, kata phute jei mukhe shei mukhe jaye paya kata phute leki skande bahirai. If I poke a thorn on my toes, can I pull it out from the shoulder? And Mahaprabhu says, no. If the thorn is on your toes, you have to pull it out from there, not from the shoulder. So he committed offense to Srivas Thakur, Devananda Pandit, but he was delivered by Bakreshwar Pandit, which is not relevant to here.
He wasn't actually delivered by Bakreshwar Pandit. His service to Bakreshwar Pandit delivered him. So what he did delivered him. Bakreshwar Pandit was simply the vehicle. But that did not minimize or eliminate his offense against Srivas, which Mahaprabhu acknowledged in that pastime. Okay, great, you've understood, you've gotten the mercy, you did your service. Now, your origin of all this is Srivas Pandit. Go and beg his forgiveness. So Mahaprabhu brought it back around to where it all started.
Okay.
Yeah. One last question here.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the class. And the noisy question, is it just like the Prabhu? I want to take opportunity for, I did offense knowing and unknowing to devotee and for this to Prabhupada. And then I want to ask forgiveness to everyone, present, not present, in the part of my life, and in past life. Please forgive me.
I can't think of any offense you've ever committed, and I've known you for a very long time. Hare Krishna. All right, we'll finish there. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Vaishnava Sangha ki jai, Gaura Premanandi.